and welcome to the EMS Educast, your podcast about EMS education by EMS educators and for EMS educators. And tonight, man, we have an episode I've been looking forward to give you a little hint. We're going to be talking about EMT training in Sri Lanka and other far-off locations. But before we introduce tonight's guests from around the globe, we're going to talk about our regular host for a minute here, and of course, as always, present, Greg Freese. How are you doing tonight, buddy?
You know, Buck, I'm really well. I've had a really crazy week. You know, most of the work I do is online education, and through this episodes of EMS Educast, it's gotten me back interested in getting back into the classroom, and so tomorrow is my third of 4 days in a row teaching a first responder refresher for a group of industrial first responders. And I'm having a lot of fun. They're a great group. I've got people in class that have been first responders for 25 plus years, and they're in like their 12th or 15th refresher program. It's pretty amazing. A lot of fun.
Cool, cool. Hopefully they don't need to use those skills.
Well, you know, lots of, well, they're in like, some large manufacturing plants, and I've heard more finger crush and amputation stories in this class than I imagined possible.
Yep.
And I know at least three of my students have anywhere between 8 and 9.5 fingers.
At least.
Very Sounds good. Like an interesting class.
The most. Yeah,
it is. We're having a lot of fun.
Well, that other voice you hear, that's, of course, Rob Terrio from Canada. And how are you doing tonight, sir?
I'm doing well, thanks. We're just wrapping up the end of our semester, so I'm seeing the light at the end of the tunnel, and I'm pretty sure it's not the train headed in my direction.
All right, how are you getting through with accreditation, too? Has that team left you alone, or is that staying?
Oh, I wish you didn't. I think I'm going to have to have my blood pressure taken down.
Did I make you
going
upset?
Into a hypertensive crisis? But well, you know, it's lots of work, and it's we'll just say it's coming along.
All right. Well, tonight
and, you can usually find me in a fetal position under my desk when I think about it.
Well, don't crawl under there yet. I have two guests to introduce tonight. I'll just tell you about both of them here for a minute, and I'll let them talk. But tonight we have Paul Bollinger, who's the Emergency Medical Services Senior Advisor who oversees EMS Train the Trainer Education and Systems Development Programs for Medical Teams International. He's been very nice enough to join us from Portland, Oregon tonight, and also his right-hand man in Sri Lanka, a man named Nomi, who is one of his main EMT trainers. And I want to give the floor here to Paul for a minute and let him introduce himself and tell us a little bit about what he does and introduce Nomi.
Appreciate it. It's always good to join fellow educators. Thanks for the introduction. My name is Paul Bollinger. I'm the Senior Technical Advisor at Medical Teams International. We're a Portland-based non-governmental organization that works a number of countries throughout the world. And my little slice of the pie at this organization is EMS education in developing countries. And we've been doing EMS education since 2001, and we've worked in far-flung areas as northern Iraq, Indonesia, El Salvador, Peru, and currently we're active in six countries: Uzbekistan, Moldova, Cambodia, Vietnam, and Sri Lanka. And kind of just real quick, my background is I did my EMS career in San Francisco for about 10 years in the 80s and 90s. And kind of went into management, did a stint in the Peace Corps in Sri Lanka, which is how I kind of became connected with the program there. Did my graduate degree in public health, but EMS kind of kept lurking in the background. And part of my graduate dissertation was the creation of the performance standards and the initial textbook that we use for our education at Medical Teams International. I'll let Nomi kind of tell his story, but I want to just kind of tell you how Nomi and I got together. During the tsunami 5 years ago, Northwest Medical Teams, which is what our name was before Medical Teams International, did a disaster response to Sri Lanka. And the tsunami there killed over 250,000 people and wiped out a significant amount of the health and infrastructure on the island. And since I had been involved in Sri Lanka as a Peace Corps volunteer, I was asked to be part of a medical team as a logistics officer. And at the time, we needed a driver. And there was this guy named Nomi that came in. And I'll kind of let Nomi kind of go from there of what has happened with him. And we can kind of talk more in depth about our other programming around the world. But I think Nomi has a really interesting story and has taught just so many people, not only in Sri Lanka, he's been one of our lead instructors in Cambodia also, being able to provide kind of Asian to Asia training. All of our programs, we use local partners as the entry point, whether that's small community organizations like our Vietnam program with the Red Cross to large nationalized programs like it is in Sri Lanka. So the key, I think the key to success of all of our programs, though, is these are programs run at the local level by the local people to be sustained at the local level. This isn't a replication of the U.S. or the Canadian EMS system. This is a system that's contextualized and created locally to meet the needs of the local population. So that's our whole history in a real quick rundown. Oh, but I think Nomi can probably tell his story and kind of where he is and some of the education work he's been doing in Sri Lanka.
Yep. Thank you, Paul. And, thank you for having me into this podcast. And, I'm Nomi. I work for Medical Team International Sri Lanka, and I'm the EMS instructor and the Northern IDP response manager in the Northern province of Sri Lanka. And my work is basically creating system in districts and teaching people in EMS education for the community level to the doctors and nurses. And I started as a 5 years ago with Medical Team International and as a driver, and I grew up gradually with the EMS training and stuff, and I available to go overseas and like Cambodia to teach EMS in Cambodia too, for the health staff and some of the community staff too. And basically that's my intro, and I will tell you more about the system later.
Sure. This sounds wonderful. I guess one question that I have right up front is what kind of pre-hospital care existed before you guys, if at all?
Well, each country is unique, and pre-hospital care it's a difficult one for developing countries because first you have to have a healthcare system to even build into. We've had requests to do work in Afghanistan and parts of Iraq, but just trying to build a system where there is no, you got to have somewhere to take patients basically. And you can train people as first responders and even at the EMT basic level. But if you don't have a hospital to take them to, a downgraded care to take them out of the back of the ambulance. So we really want to look at partnerships in countries that are going to be able to build the program and sustain it. So in the case of Sri Lanka, one thing that neither Nomi or I have alluded to is when we started this in 5 years ago, the country was still in the middle of a massive civil war that had been going on for 30 years. And that war just ended this past year. So when Nomi mentioned he's working with the IDPs, IDPs are internally displaced people or refugees. There's 300,000 refugees in the northern province that have been displaced. So he's been working on providing both direct medical services and helping develop the EMS system in that newly liberated area. So he's got a number of challenges before him of rebuilding a country that's coming out of a major disaster, working in a developing country, and coming out of a post-conflict environment. So there's a huge amount of challenges there. But initially, there really wasn't an official EMS system in Sri Lanka. There were some fragmented ambulance transport units and a lot of interest. And it really wasn't until 2005 that we were able to kind of gather all the parties together that were interested in doing EMS. And it was kind of a breakthrough moment. We had all these people in one room, and it was doctors and nurses and other health professionals and the fire personnel and disasters, and they were all kind of looking at each other and didn't realize that other people in the room were interested in this. And this kind of catalyst began of what could we do as Sri Lankans to make an EMS program for our country?
I'm not geographically literate enough, but how can you just give us a sense for the size of Sri Lanka and I guess what sort of area of the country you're trying to cover with EMS?
We're the Sri Lanka is off the southern coast of India. It's about the size of West Virginia and has, what is it, Nomi, 4 or 5 times the population base as West Virginia? So
it's the same population like Australia, like 20 million people.
But crowded into a much, much, much smaller space. And Nomi's work is a nationalized project, so they're looking at the entire island.
Okay.
Now, who has funded you guys to put on these projects?
We're a faith-based nonprofit, but also we do funding from the faith community, private foundations, direct government funding. U.S. government's provided a great deal of funding to Nomi for his Northern Province work. Foreign governments have been involved with our funding, foreign organizations. The tsunami, as you remember, there was just this huge outpouring of the world community to help rebuild the affected areas. So we were able to access a lot of those funds, leverage those funds to be able to build a system.
Okay. And I guess now that you've had, 5 years to work at it, what does pre-hospital look like there now?
Nomi, why don't you tell them about 110 and everything?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely, yeah. When we start this EMS system in Sri Lanka, we didn't have any, even a single, number to call. People have different numbers, 10-digit numbers and all those stuff. So, the first challenge is we have to create an emergency number. So we have to get the telecom regulatory commission to, give a number to call emergency. So we started with the getting these numbers, and like 911, we have 110. So when there's an emergency, you can call 110. So we started with Colombo. We worked with fire brigade in Colombo, and we started the call center in fire brigade. So we gradually started Colombo at least the capital, and likewise we covered the major cities. Most of the areas, what we did was we worked with fire brigade and we used them. And some of the areas, which is we can't use the fire brigade because we don't have all the cities fire brigade. So what we did was we had some hospital-based ambulance services. And likewise, people are not used to this system. So it's very, very new system. They won't accept this. So what people think is, because when there is an accident or something, what they do is they will, take the patient and put it in a tuk-tuk kosai, like a trishaw, and they send the patient to a hospital. So we had to do some big community awareness for these people to understand that. So we did some mass community awareness program in Colombo and the other areas, but when you take that's a local government body, that's a government body. The fire brigades are doing this system. What we did was in north, what we are doing now, I'm just doing a training for one province, one district. It's called Mana in north of Sri Lanka. So I'm going to create a system over there with we have 7 ambulances over there. So not equipped ambulance, means just a transporting vehicle. So what I'm going to do is standardize. We have a standard of ambulance. So we have a basic standard of ambulance. We're going to standardize the ambulance. We're going to provide some equipment for the ambulance. I'm going to give training for the ambulance drivers and those who are working in the ambulance, like EMT basic. So we have EMT level 1, level 2. So that means EMT, the first responder, and the EMT level 2 is like EMT basic. Yeah. So I'm teaching those people about the EMS. So they was really interested. They want to have this system. Like they know some of the areas in like Colombo and like north, and some of the areas functioning this system. People wanted to have this. So they're seeing that system in the other areas. So right now, what we are trying to do is we are going to do district EMS systems. Then our long-term plan is a centralized communication system like 911 in province. So we get one call center for whole province. That's the future plans.
Naomi, I have a question for you. I teach at a college called Georgian College in Ontario in Canada, and we have a campus in Chandigarh, which is the complete opposite end of India. Is there anything like that in that region? Anything like the system you're developing there?
Yeah, absolutely. That India is India now only they realize that this is in developing country this EMS is very very new thing. So like India is they identify the you may be aware about EMRI, so Emergency Medical Research Institute. They are what they are trying to do is same as the 911. They have centralized communication, so that. They have India several you know, states. Like recently, they started in Tamil Nadu, that's south of India. The same system. So they also like now only they're developing.
And I have a question for Paul. Paul, how, when you go into a country and I assume you go in and assess the existing EMS system and look at what education exists and what resources are available, what the sort of infrastructure is available?
Absolutely. We do a comprehensive needs assessment for each of our projects that we begin with. And, you know, the key, though, is to find that local partner or champion on the ground that's really going to be the driving force. You know, the key to the success of medical teams is that we send teams and, you know, we send professionals from the U.S., Canada, Europe, Australia, to provide the initial training and kind of the seed work on a train-the-trainer type model and, you know, hoping to either inspire one or two students to come forward to be master trainers. And then we don't have to be there all the time. A success of Sri Lanka, though, was that we did hire a paramedic from Indiana to live in Sri Lanka, and he's been there now for almost 4 years. And he's been providing the kind of technical assistance and management of the entire project to help kind of look at everything from a really macro level to see, you know, we've talked about training. Now we need to be talking about dispatch and what other systems issues need to be addressed, you know, on the, you know, receipt of the pre-hospital patient to continuing ed and the legislation needs to change. You know, that's a real big hurdle for us is, you know, getting recognition for non-physician personnel to provide patient care. In Sri Lanka, when we first started, it was illegal for non-physicians to use a stethoscope. So we had a lot of work to do in the very beginning to even get this recognized.
And you said earlier that training levels are designed to meet local needs, that they're not based on any U.S. standard or Canadian standard or Australian standard. So how do you go about making that determination? Is it based on the perception of the medical community? Is it based on sort of resources that exist? How do you gauge what level of education you will provide in a given country or area?
Sure. The education is all based, our baseline education that we introduce to a country is based off the DOT NHTSA EMS guidelines for each of the three levels. So we use that as the entry point. Now,
it is based on a standard then?
It is based on a standard. But you can't just take what happens in, let's say, the state of Oregon and replicate that in Colombo. So we need to work with the local medical authority. You know, our U.S. media does a great job in sending out our TV shows everywhere, but when I walk into a Ministry of Health, they all want paramedic service, but their hospitals don't have ventilators. Or, you know, they all want AEDs, but there's only like two defibrillators in the entire country. Mm-hmm. So we need to really think, what is a usable piece of equipment? And then, you know, trying to get, you know, when we start the education is, you need to provide curriculum that's in the local language and contextualized locally. It isn't taking a Brady book or Mosby and just doing a direct translation into Tamil or Sinhalese. You need to be able to work with the local medical community to put it into terms and into scope of practice that would be applicable for the country.
That was going to be part of my next question is how do you deal with the language? You said that you do train the trainer and do you write your own manuals through translation? How does that work?
we'll take the case of Sri Lanka. Sri Lanka has just an awesome editorial team that's made up from all facets of the healthcare delivery system, MOH, Ministry of Health, the physician community, the first responder community, and they came together and contextualized a book, not a direct translation, but contextualized a book for the needs of Sri Lanka. Sri Lanka has, you know, coming out of a conflict situation, they see more high velocity wounds than most of us will ever see in our entire EMS careers. And so they've focused a lot on high velocity trauma, landmines, unexploded ordnance. Also, they deal with, you know, on the other side of the scale, they don't do anything with hypothermia, but they deal a lot with snake bite, and they deal a lot with, you know, other, you know, environmental issues that are more prevalent in the tropical based community.
Okay. And I have a question for Nomi. So sorry if I'm monopolizing here a bit. So Paul, you were saying that, you know, you have to deal with perceptions of the medical community, and in some cases, yeah, it would be illegal for a non-physician to use a stethoscope. So Nomi, how do you deal with educating the other medical professionals? Do you have conversations with physicians and nurses about pre-hospital care and about EMTs and what their role is, and how do they perceive that? How do they react to it?
Yeah, exactly. So what we are doing is we train these pre-hospital providers. And we will let them know we're going to teach your doctors and nurses in the hospitals. So what we do is when we finish the training in pre-hospital care, we will go and teach some primary trauma care, and we introduce what we are doing, what is the importance of pre-hospital care for the doctors and nurses, why we need a system like this. So what is the pre-hospital care providers are doing? So it's you can't do it in 1 or 2 days. It takes some time. So it's gradually changing. So my senior officer he mentioned that the person from Indiana that director, my teacher, and he's our advisor too. So what we are doing is we're going to some of the universities and we teach the medical students and we tell them. And we do some seminars for them about the pre-hospital care and the system development and why we need a system like this. So when they come to the hospital and feel they know what is the scope of the pre-hospital care providers, what do you need to do, what is his duty to encourage him to do more and more. So some of the people don't have that the knowledge. They don't know about the system. So we gradually train them. You know, we teach them. So we do classes for continuing education. We give the responsibility for the doctors and nurses in the hospital. You have to motivate your pre-hospital care provider. When you receive a patient, you just encourage him. You have to encourage him to do more and more. But when we started, we had, you know, we even have a problem to use emergency medical technicians. They said we can't even use the medical word. So we have to convince lots of people to use this medical. So they said only medical professional, only you can use the medical word. So they give a medical emergency rescue technicians. So what we did was we had some forums. We told them, you know, what's happening in developing country. But some of our doctors and some of our physicians, some of people went overseas, see this system, and those people are really interested, very keen on this. So they came, they come with us, they go with us, and they tell the people, you know, this is very important. So likewise, it's changing. It's another 5 or 10 years, it will thoroughly change, I think.
Well, another question kind of plays into all of this, and this is one of the first things that came to my mind, is every profession needs oversight, a governing body, regulation. And obviously, you guys had to create that from scratch. Who is now the governing body of EMS in Sri Lanka, and how did you guys create that?
Well, going back to the meeting in 2005, a lot of the medical leaders were in that meeting, you know, meaning, you know, the head of the trauma hospital in Colombo and members of the fire brigade and the Ministry of Health. And that group diffused into what's called the Trauma Secretariat. And the Trauma Secretariat has operational arms somewhat based on how you'd see our kind of state EMS type systems. You've got a medical director, you've got one group that works with the trauma side, you know, a trauma system. You've got someone that's dealing with the pre-hospital EMS side. So the Trauma Secretariat is run by the Sri Lankans, and that's kind of the governance body of the EMS system currently in Sri Lanka.
God, just writing all those regulations from scratch and doing. Oh, what was your? I mean, that was a nightmare. What was your basis for it? Did you again go back to, say, National Registry guidelines or things?
Some National Registry, some, you know, looked a lot at the UK Emergency Medicine Guidelines because Sri Lanka used to be a colony of the United Kingdom, so a lot of the physicians were trained in the UK. We looked at our own home. I, you know, scavenged things from our, you know, local providers here in the Portland metro area. And
sure.
Our volunteers went over and did trainings on, you know, specifically on protocol development. One of our volunteers is a board member with American Ambulance Association, and he's gone over and helped on the whole kind of public-private side and looking at, you know, how do you bring a private provider into a very, you know, socialized medicine system. And had to look at all that. And as Nomi said, this is definitely a huge work in progress, but for what's been accomplished in 5 years is incredible.
Well, sure.
It
sounds like it. Well, what a lot of the bloggers in the United States are doing, this little bit of movement called EMS 2.0. And one of the ideas behind it is if you were making just an EMS system from scratch, and you didn't know about EMS today, what would it look like? And it's so interesting to talk to somebody that got to make one from scratch. And I was wondering, is there one part of it that you were like, I got this fantastic idea from it, and it worked so well in Sri Lanka, and I'm so proud of it that I, you know, brought it to you. And if you could pick from anywhere in the world and bring something to Sri Lanka, but do you have that one thing that you're proud of that just, like, was a home run out of the stadium that just worked really well?
I think it's the, you know, this is going to sound corny, but I think it's having the right people at the right place at the right time. We've tried projects in other countries where it's been exceptionally painful to progress and, you know, get bogged down in bureaucracy. There's some real champions that are, you know, at the very high levels of government in Sri Lanka that have been very supportive of this project. And without that, a lot of the challenges that Nomi's had to go through on getting acceptance at provincial level, getting acceptance at the national level, getting 110 started. You know, we had strong support of our government. You know, the U.S. ambassador was right there when we started their, you know, the 911 system for the northern province of Jaffna. I think it's, you know, you still, EMS is about, you know, the EMS brotherhood, if you will, is the people. And I think that's kind of the home run piece is, allow the locals to do it. And so many development groups go in and try to replicate what they know best, which is at home. But, you know, people have been living in Sri Lanka for a long time and they know what's needed. And it was just being able to provide them with the tools, they're able to build their own system.
And Nomi, do you find that this is a profession now that attracts both men and women? Are there any barriers, gender barriers in the educational piece for this?
Actually, we had some, like, you know, this is, Sri Lanka is very, very, very different from, you know, the very cultural people. So, when we, it's not in, like, Colombo, you have very, very westernized. So, that's no problem. So, we can, the ladies, we have EMTs and all those stuff. But when you take them, like, north, so, ladies are not allowed to even drive a vehicle, like not allowed means they are very shy to do that. So when we have like people in hospital, so we train hospital people to go out when there is a female patient, they go with the, like they send female EMTs. So it's changing. So it's very, very, sometimes they think that it's not good to touch a lady's, you know, the boy's hand or the men's hand. So they feel a little uncomfortable. So we have to, you know, motivate them. We have to, you know, teach them about that. So Mm-hmm. It's a long process. It takes some time to change.
Right. And what about the structure of the program? Presume you have obviously a theory component, an in-classroom component, and you have presumably a lab where you do patient simulations. Do you find it that you're able to get the tools that you need to do simulation in the labs, like patient simulators, equipment, that kind of thing?
Let me answer that globally first. SimMan, we can't afford to send SimMan to.
Yeah, I wasn't thinking a high fidelity simulation so much. I was just thinking, sort of basic simulators and if there were differences, cultural differences when it came to things like role playing, where students play the role of the patient, that kind of those kinds of things.
In a lot of our countries, the whole thing of doing hands-on scenarios in medical training is just really foreign. Mm-hmm. We've worked a lot in the STAN countries, Uzbekistan, Tajikistan, mm-hmm. Former Soviet, it's, very lecture formatted. And so when we're, telling everyone, do a lecture, clear the room, let's set up and do hands-on scenarios. We see retention rates are just going through the roof on just understanding skills. And it's many of them, even the physicians, have never had that opportunity to practice a skill before actually doing it on a patient. So I think Nomi's group and our other projects too, the strong suit is, very scenario heavy, using a base, lecture format, but also extremely scenario heavy. Again, supplies is a big challenge for us. There isn't a whole lot of Laerdal reps that service, developing countries. We do a lot with donated materials, and I can get, a lot of our fire departments will give me their lightly used mannequins and we'll rehab them and then we'll send them over. We were able to send, over a container's worth of VMS training equipment to Sri Lanka in the very beginning, and now they're adapting things for use in their own country. Same in, Cambodia and Uzbekistan. As you develop a career path and as you develop a system, the vendors show up. I think they're starting to get vendors now in Sri Lanka, and where they see the money, they'll be there.
I'm curious about the students and just, when somebody comes, I guess, first of all, why do people choose to go to EMT class, and then what kind of academic preparation do they have for that kind of training, and then do they make it? Do you typically have a high percentage make it through the program and then are able to get jobs, or do a lot of students wash out as they learn more about it?
It's not professionally. It's not a EMT is not a professionally. We didn't have a job type of thing. So what we're trying to do is we're going to create the we have to create this job opportunity. So when we are creating these things, so when we're teaching this, we have to teach the others also. So they now only we seeing that people are seeing that this is like a profession we have in the developing country. This is a separate profession. So it's now only it's getting. So we have to separate the academic level, what are the new levels you have to be go through EMT class and all those stuff. So I will tell you one thing that recently one university wanted to have adapt these classes for them to have a 6-month course for them. They can teach people and they can train people. So they wanted us to come and teach over there. So we did a class in university in northwest of Sri Lanka. So what we doing is we did a 5-day class for them, just an intro class. Intro, and we did it. And they wanted to have this, adapt this curriculum, and they wanted to give, offer a education program into that their system. So these are the things. Now it's developing, and then only it creates some job opportunities. What they are doing is it's ambulance means when you have if you can drive, that's it. So when you take the northern part of Sri Lanka, that we created the system over there. So that I gave the director of health services over there to, you know, to understanding about having people into the ambulances. So he said, if I'm going to hire any more people, that I know who are the people I need to hire. Definitely he need to go through some courses, or somebody can go through these courses. So previously they didn't know about these things. If he can drive the ambulance, that's enough. That they think that's his duty.
Right.
So it's very it's changing.
So who I'm sorry.
That's okay. Sorry, I was going to kind of give another example of that.
Well,
a lot
ahead.
Of times our partners are, you know, it's the government. So this, it becomes their job duty. In Uzbekistan, for example, we're partnered very tightly with the medical school. So it's the physicians themselves, as part of their medical training, go through an EMT basic course, and it's very, you know, trauma focused. So it's been, you know, integrated in and standardized within their training program to have this curriculum as part of their medical training. In other countries, it's the road police. They're the first responders. So as part of their academy, they go through a training in one of our projects in Moldova. So it kind of spans the breadth of different, you know, access points to the education process.
Yeah. Well, let's say I'm somebody in Sri Lanka and I want to be an EMT and I want to get a job. What will that school look like? How long will it be? And who will employ me afterwards? Who will actually write my paycheck?
Yeah, it's very different. So we don't have a class, a school for the EMS education. Okay. So we are trying to give this the materials and everything to the universities and schools for these to adapt your curriculum, and you can go through a course and give some people to education and make some job opportunities. So if you wanted to come, somebody wanted to come become an EMT, definitely they need to come to a medical team in international, that our organization, and go through these classes. But what, some of the areas, what we are trying to do is we're going to give this for the government body to have these systems. They're going to have this, education program to adapt for them. And they can offer people to come and learn and make some job opportunities. So we have to, think about various things. Gradually we created the curriculums and CDs and we have basic and EMTs. So when we wanted to teach more people, so more levels, like intermediate or paramedic levels, we have to have people to get these systems. Then only people get encouraged and they wanted to learn more. So if I wanted to do my paramedic education, but I can't do it in Sri Lanka. If I wanted to do it, I have to go even in US or somewhere else. Mm. We don't have that.
You were saying, Nomi, that you go to the universities and other educational institutions and provide them with a curriculum and try to persuade them to adopt the program in the hopes that this will create new job opportunities. Now, do they come back to you and say, we'd like to see those jobs in existence before we adopt the curriculum and begin to provide this education?
Absolutely. Now the people are really keen on that. So some of the ambulance services in Sri Lanka, the local ambulance service, they want the people who trained in EMT. So they know that there's a course for this ambulance staff. So when you have an ambulance, so we don't have a standard of ambulance. I'm not criticizing or anything. That I'm saying that that what you have just ambulances. So it's all starting from beginning, standardizing, rules and regulations for the ambulance, what is the purpose of using ambulance. So everything need to start very, very ground level. So when you have recruiting people for you, if you are owning an ambulance service, when you have to recruit some people, you have to want some trained people. So now only people are getting that knowledge. So they wanted to adapt, you know, get some people who trained on EMT. So it's there. So they want the people, like the trained people. And the university what we did was like 2 weeks ago. They really wanted to have this class, the curriculum for them to teach. But you know, only you can't theoretically only you can't train people. So you know, just teaching it's not going to help. So you have to have some people who trained on this, you know, professionally, and they can go and you know, if you give lectures only, it's not going to help. So you have to somebody have very knowledge to train people, you know, in clinically, in skills.
Mm-hmm. And are you able to provide, speaking of skills, clinical instruction for students, provide in-hospital experience for them?
Absolutely. That what we are, what I'm doing is now it's I'm working in northern province of the IDPs, where the IDPs three and more than 300,000 IDPs. I am working on a province called Mana. It's very newly resettled area. People are now only after conflict is over, so people are resettling those areas. What I'm trying to do is I'm going to start the ambulance service over there. So what I'm doing is I'm getting some people from hospital, like nurses and some of the physician assistants and some EMS providers, you know, the ambulance drivers and ambulance workers, getting them whole in one class.
Did we lose Nomi?
Sounds like it. Yeah, what's amazing, I mean, I'm just sitting here marveling at, well, A, the fact that we're talking about EMS halfway around, all the way around the world, or on the other side of the world. And then I was just looking at your website, Paul, and just that in 5 years, it talked about 100,000 people have been trained, and you know, stocked more than 100 ambulances, and
yeah,
and so those 100,000 personnel, are those all at the EMT basic level?
No, about 700 to 800 are at EMT basic level, okay. And they go through about I think in Sri Lanka they're doing about a 110-hour course. The big group is community first aid, and the community first aiders, these are. A lot of those folks came out of the conflict areas, and a lot of it was they needed it for survival. And they are basically adjuncts to a developing EMS system. So I think these community first aiders, obviously not all of them, but some will move on and become, you know, get more first aid, you know, more EMS style training once it becomes available in their areas.
Yeah. Is it eventually your goal that, you know, Medical Teams International will be able to sort of pack their bags and go home, and you'll have a sustainable, you know, Sri Lanka EMS system?
I sure hope so.
Yeah. How far off do you think that is?
That's the $300,000 question. you know, a big step was the end of the active conflict in the country and the unification of the country. And are they able to redirect financial and human resources to the development of a system? I don't know. I see us there for a good solid 2 to 3 years more of, you know, direct hands-on. But the Nomis and others from Sri Lanka that are there, this is the, you know, the pioneers of this developing EMS system. They're going to be there. They're going to be, you know, the leaders of the EMS system. I mean, that's what's fascinating is, last year in 2008, I brought 10 of them to Portland, Seattle, to come to the United States to see the U.S. system. And they did everything, sat in on paramedic classes, did lots of ride-alongs, did some clinical rotations at our medical school. And time after time, it was, wow, we need to replicate this in our country. And how can we do this? And this is more people need to see this. And it's fascinating that to see how quickly that this is happening in Sri Lanka. So to answer your question, I say 2 to 3 more years, and I think they'll be very sustained.
Well, and Paul, how do you stay connected to the classrooms around the world? Do you, Do you Skype into classrooms or webcast into classrooms as guest speakers or anything of that nature to stay connected, not just with the leaders or the champions of the various programs that you help establish, but the students themselves?
Well, I don't do direct education to the students. I leave those to the line folks. Occasionally, if I'm in country, I have a lot of frequent flyer miles, so I visit most of the country sites and get out there to, you know, see each of the programs. We have real strong management in each country that we work in, and I rely on them to be able to provide updates, and we do a lot of data collection on our countries that we have the human resources to do that. You know, continuing ed is a huge challenge, and trying to get continuing ed established in new programming is real hard. And just the importance of it. I just finished an evaluation of a program in North Vietnam and just trying to explain to the partner how important it was to bring these groups back together to at least, you know, once, twice a year. And I was just working with a community volunteer group, but these folks really made some changes in their section of their country and really started saving some lives. And this was community volunteers with really low literacy rates. We did a real hands-on form of a first responder course. And there was measurable difference in patient survival rates from prior to the project to the end of the project.
Is there a time when you take people like Nomi and say, okay, you've learned so much in Sri Lanka, let's take you out of Sri Lanka for a minute and let you visit other EMS services around the globe and see for yourself what you might like to bring back? There seems to always be a time for that as well, and I was wondering if you've delved into that with this system.
Absolutely. Like I mentioned, Nomi's been to the United States. He spent over close to 35 days here in the U.S. and mm-hmm. got to see both urban and rural programming, different sets of different settings in academia. He's been to the programs in India, so he's seeing things of similar culture. He's also teaching in Cambodia, so one of his first things he told me when he went to Cambodia is like, oh my gosh, Sri Lanka was never that far behind. And I said, it was that far behind. It wasn't that long ago. So he's seeing a country where their medical system is not nearly as advanced as it is in Sri Lanka. And he's been all the way here to the U.S. to see, you know, what is considered, you know, a pretty premier program. Mm-hmm. So yeah, absolutely. To be able to see the other programs, and we've been able to send a number of the folks like here to the U.S. and Cambodia and to India.
How does a country sort of sign on with you guys? Is it, you know, there's got to be other places that don't have much for a pre-hospital medical system, and are you out seeking countries to partner with, or are they finding you?
Both. They're finding us. I mean, big thing is, you know, we're a nonprofit, so a lot of this is funding driven. Right now, it's not a primary funding thing to fund, you know, pre-hospital care. So I usually package this as, you know, reducing secondary injury as a result of a road traffic accident. So that's kind of my tagline, is that's an entry point into countries. I don't want to go into a country unless it can be ultimately a sustainable project. So, you know, typically that has to be at a government level and getting government buy-in and that there is a healthcare facility. I would say right now we probably, for new countries, you know, request for services, you know, we can't meet all the requests just because of for funding reasons.
Okay. Well, that's a good segue, I think, though, Paul, to, you know, you and I originally connected a few years ago just because I was curious about how people got involved in your program as volunteer, as well as, you know, financial contributors. And maybe you could just talk about the volunteer opportunities that exist for EMS professionals, and then also how people can find out more information about Medical Teams International and even contribute to the effort if they're interested.
Well, definitely contribute. I will take that anytime. We take all currencies.
Okay.
We are Medical Teams International, and Teams is what we do. We send out volunteer experts from around the globe to help us out. And our website is real easy. It's medicalteams.org. And it's just I think it's get involved, follow that link. And for EMS professionals, there's basically two options. One is the programs you heard about tonight, and that's working in development style programs in education and systems development. We also have very limited opportunities for EMS personnel in our disaster response roster. We do rapid disaster response to immediate and long-term disaster situations, everything from, earthquakes, hurricanes, floods, conflict situations to ongoing situations like in the north that NOMI's working on with displaced peoples as a result of war or natural disaster. I recently sent a paramedic from the Portland area to work in southwest Uganda in a Congolese refugee camp. He was providing primary care and ended up doing a little bit of teaching on patient packaging and teaching their equivalent of the ambulance there in Uganda. Those are some other opportunities for EMS personnel. The ideal EMS volunteer, I'd like people that have at least 3 years verifiable systems experience at a very minimum, and typically at the paramedic level. I'll take basics if they have a real strong education background, and then that includes all the equivalencies in the UK, Australia, Canada, and et cetera.
If someone had an old equipment closet that had a lot of older AEDs in there that maybe with a new battery might be put in a service. Do you guys take equipment donations as well?
We'll take equipment. I've been kind of steering away from the old AEDs for two reasons. One, getting those batteries when they die in a tropical climate is real hard to do. And then the consumables, the patches and cords and everything else. Also, most of the health personnel in the countries we work in are really well read, and they know that we changed the standards for AEDs a couple of years ago.
Okay.
So they're wanting the latest and greatest. So mannequins are a big one. Gently used mannequins that aren't completely destroyed. We always will take those, and then other equipment on a case by case basis.
And I was just thinking, Rob and Buck and I, we've never actually met in person, but maybe we could rally a EMS Educast volunteer team.
That would be awesome.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yes. You guys contact me. Let me know when and where, and we'll go.
All right.
The funding would be the issue.
That's something to be upfront about is for my development projects, volunteers support their own travel. We're able to negotiate some pretty reduced rates, and in most of our countries, we're able to take care of your in-country costs. But it's a significant amount of expense to go over. Sri Lanka is not a quick plane ride away. From here, it's 23 hours of lovely flying. So,
Paul, it gets me thinking about the technology that we use here. I do a lot of webcasting with my students where we have synchronous online learning. What kind of technology challenges do you run into other countries? We just sort of take for granted in the U.S. and Canada that we have a data projector and a PowerPoint presentation, and we can just go in and use the latest technology. Is there anything like that in the countries that you go to, or is it that area a real challenge?
It depends, but typically, we can bring in a laptop and a PowerPoint projector pretty well. My biggest challenge, as we found out tonight, is bandwidth and internet access. I'd love to do stuff with, seminar formats like this, but I know bandwidth in a lot of the countries is either real difficult or it can get extremely expensive. NOMI was working off satellite for a while there, and bandwidth on satellite, it's pricey. I am looking at projects using VSAT technology, which is fixed-based satellite, kind of distance learning, and I've got a potential project in Africa for EMS that I might be doing next year around VSAT technology. So stay tuned.
Interesting. Yeah. Looking forward to that because the possibility to, communicate with other educators around the world is quite exciting just to learn from them and hopefully share some of, what we know here.
Absolutely. I think we have NOMI back. Am I correct? Greg?
I thought I had him on.
Oh, I was about, because we're getting close to our hour, and if we do have him back, I was going to kind of open it up if anybody had a last question for NOMI. But if we can't talk, well, that's another issue. But we are coming close to our hour, and does anybody have any final questions for Paul?
Yeah, I guess, Paul, I'm always looking for, if you have a I'd just be interested in, you know, is there an anecdote or a great story about how a new EMS group, you know, made a great save or a cool intervention? Anything jumped to mind? You know, the type of stuff you'd put on a brochure and really try to sell the program on.
Two things. Yeah, I think Nomi's story is, you know, one that's really great. You know, here's a guy that started out as nothing more than a driver during a disaster and became interested in a real new program in his country. And, you know, he comes from a minority group, the Tamils, which were basically, you know, being, you know, relegated to the northern part of the country. So he tells a story that he always wanted to be a firefighter and he was never going to become a firefighter. Nomi's texting me and telling me he's had a power outage and that's why he can't get back on. So his story is that he always wanted to be a firefighter, but because he's from, as a Tamil, he was never going to be able to do that because the Sinhalese got those primary jobs. He says now the fire chiefs come to him for education. So I think, I'm sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say that is a great story.
Yeah. And then just changing perception, you know, in Asian culture, there's the sense of fatalism that if someone dies, they're meant to die. And there's no, you know, you don't put hands on a dead person unless you're the people that deal with the dead, and kind of getting over that barrier now where communities are starting to step forward and seeing the importance of first responder training, that they're now responding to accident scenes before, you know, the ambulance comes and they're actually helping out. One of our country directors in another country tells a story of coming across on a traffic accident scene and here's former students are holding C-spine and someone else came out of the crowd to help with another, you know, help with the patient as another student. And, you know, the arriving ambulance crew was another group of students. And, you know, it was, I mean, that's the cool stuff where you start seeing the system change and start seeing public perception of EMS change and their importance and their role in that whole system.
It's refreshing to hear that, that sense of public duty and, you know, bystanders stopping to help seems to be universal, seems to be around the world, incredibly, really sort of strengthens your belief in the human spirit.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
All right.
Well,
go ahead,
Buck.
unless you have something else, I was going to kind of, do our last wrap up where we, everybody tells where we can reach each other.
Yeah, please do.
Paul, now you told us about how we can reach Medical Teams International, but do you do any of this social media stuff? Is there anywhere else where we can find you personally on the web?
You know, I live by my Skype, and I noticed a couple of you have already added me on the Skype contacts. I'm on Skype. You can find me via my email address, which is pbollinger, B-O-L-L-I-N-G-E-R, @medicalteams.org. Medical Teams does some Facebook work. I don't have my program on Facebook yet. We just kind of added into that. But, you know, email, I'm always available by email. And when I travel, I'm always looking for internet cafes. So I'm always trying to keep online there.
All right.
Well, and Nomi's been able to text back with me through a different route. And he's very sorry he's unable to finish up with this due to the internet speed.
Oh, well, look, express our gratitude for him coming on tonight. And, you know, who knows what time it is there for him. I hope he didn't get up late in the night.
8 o'clock in the morning there.
Oh, that's not too bad. That's not too bad. Rob, where can we get a hold of you, buddy?
You can find me on my blog, which is paramedictutor.wordpress.com. And, Paul, I was going to tell you that I have quite a few podcasts on there, educational podcasts that I use with my students, and they're open to anyone and everyone on the planet. I was going to ask you a question about Facebook, because there are two Facebook groups under the same name, under Medical Teams International, and I wasn't sure which one would be the right one to join.
That's a good question, because I know they're new with Facebook. I know Nomi also has a Facebook account, a Facebook group on Sri Lankan EMS workers, and probably join that. If time doesn't run out here and I find it, I'll let you know. I'll email you directly on the Facebook account which one is the one to be on.
Okay. Yeah, maybe we can post it on EMS Educast.
Yeah, it'll the link section. This won't be posted for a couple of days, so hopefully we can get it and we can put it in the links. Mr. Fries, where are the myriad of places we can find you, my friend?
Well, Facebook, of course, is a good one. Also, you know, Buck, you and I are doing a lot of great work with the EMSbootcamp.com.
That's right.
So that's another place as well.
Yeah, we got some new projects coming up.
Online education sessions that I guess people anywhere with an internet connection can access.
Oh, awesome, awesome. And, yes, I am actually Greg Fries and I are talking about some new EMS boot camp sessions, so be looking for that. There'll be a lot of cardiology coming up and EKG recognition things. And you can find me at my blog at gomerville.com, GOMERVILLE.com. I put up a lot of stuff lately. We had a big old argument on the EMS garage the other night, and I put up a couple of posts about it. Dr. Wesley just decided to take on all bloggers and got more than he expected, I think. It was fun. Anyway, I'll read about that on the blog. And, other place, I'm on Facebook and I'm on Twitter. You can find me at Buckman. Enough about me. I'd so much like to thank our guests. I'm so sorry Nomi couldn't finish up with us, but we will look for him on Facebook. And thank you, Paul, for coming out. And thank you for everything. Thank you for everything that you do. Everything you do sounds like it's outside of the box, really hard work, but probably one of the most rewarding professions I can even imagine.
It's a lot of fun. It absolutely is. That Facebook group is Sri Lanka Emergency Medical Technician.
Oh, awesome.
And that's Nomi's Facebook group.
Right. Well, Paul, thanks for coming out and so much, and thanks for the work you do. And, you know, I'd like to talk to you guys again here in a little while, get another report card, or even talk about another one of your projects.
I'd love to.
Yeah, so thank you so much. And for everybody on the EduCast, when's the next time we're going to get together, Greg, and who are we talking to next?
Next Wednesday night, we've got another show planned. You know, we've got our next episode of the Journal Club coming up in early January. Mm-hmm. And after the first episode of the Journal Club, we had a couple listeners email us and say, hey, you know, slow down a little bit. You guys were talking journal reading and some statistics concepts and just sort of research stuff that was passing by me, and wondering if you could just back up and talk about, you know, reading an article, things to look for, sort of interpreting what the findings are. And Bill Toon is going to be joining us next week to be part of that discussion. And then he's also going to be part of our January series of episodes that are going to focus on cardiac arrest and cardiac arrest-related education for EMS professionals. So that's next Wednesday. And then we're on vacation for the rest of 2009 before starting up again that first Wednesday of January.
Okay. Well, we won't abandon you, but we are going to take a little break for Christmas.
Right.
And so anyway, thanks to all our listeners for coming out. And this is a fantastic episode. So tell your friends about it. And join us again next week. This is Buck Ferris signing off for the EMS EduCast. Good night.